This is Fresh Air. This is the time of year when our culture critics make lists of the best things they've read or listened to or seen. Our critic at large, John Powers, has a different kind of list, one he calls his ghost list, the things he liked but neglected to review.
I don't believe in ghosts. But sometimes, when I walk through my house, I think I hear the forlorn cries of all the books, movies, and TV shows that I've loved over the past few months, but never got around to talking about. And so, every December, I try to silence them with my annual ghost list of favorites I've ignored. A group that in 2017 ranges in spirit from cosmic surrealism to a rip from the headlines immediacy. The British TV series National Treasure could hardly be more of our moment. Shown on Hulu, it stars the monumental Scottish actor Robbie Coltrane, of Cracker and Harry Potter fame, as Paul Finchley, a beloved comedian who's accused of sexually assaulting young women. But is he really guilty, or simply the target of a zeitgeisty witch hunt? The show is great at capturing the situation's emotional cost, especially to Paul's protective wife, superbly played by Julie Walters, and his adoring, self-destructive adult daughter, a tremendous Andrea Riseborough. As Paul juggles his public and private personas, National Treasure leaves us asking how well we truly know our loved ones, let alone our cultural heroes. The slipperiness of the self is the terrain of perhaps my favorite Australian writer, Helen Garner, a journalist, novelist, and screenwriter who's the down-under equivalent of Mary McCarthy or Joan Didion. You get a feast of her work in True Stories, the collected nonfiction, a low-cost ebook from Text Publishing that's also due out in print this spring. A great storyteller, Garner casts her ruthlessly penetrating eye on a vast range of tales about murder, marriage, sexual harassment, aging. She feels freed by turning 70. And her own moments of personal cowardice. Scarily forthright and addictively readable, this book's 800 pages are a model of how to be unblinkingly honest about the world and ourselves. In contrast, dishonesty has a field day in His Girl Friday, Howard Hawks's fast, funny, gleefully cynical 1940 newspaper comedy, just out in a glorious new high-def restoration from Criterion. At the peak of his wit and good looks, Cary Grant stars as Walter Burns, an amoral big city editor who tries to finagle his equally hard-nosed star reporter and ex-wife, Hildy Johnson, that's Rosalind Russell, into dumping her boringly nice insurance man fiancé and covering a murderer's execution. Here, Walter takes the two to lunch, where the fiancé, played by Ralph Bellamy, asks Hildy about quitting journalism to marry him.
Hildy, are you sure you want to quit?
Now, Bruce, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, if there's any doubt about it, or if there's anything that... No. This is your chance to have a home and to be, like you said, a human being, and I'm going to make you take that chance.
Certainly. Why, I wouldn't let her stay. No. No, she deserves all this happiness, Bruce, all the things I couldn't give her. Yeah, all she ever wanted was a home.
Well, I'll certainly try to give her one.
I know you will, Bruce. Where are you going to live?
Albany.
Albany, huh? Got a family up there, then?
Oh, just my mother.
Just a mother? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to live with your mother?
Well, just for the first year.
Oh, well, that will be nice. Yes, yes. A home with mother. In Albany, too.
His Girl Friday is one of the greatest American movies. And in its freedom and high spirits, one of the most American. Things are more muted in 6-4, a profoundly odd and fascinating crime novel by Hideo Yokoyama, which sold over 1 million copies in its native Japan. Its hero is Yoshinobu Mikami, a provincial police detective who wants to crack an unsolved 14-year-old murder, but faces obstacles, including his own daughter going missing. Although 6-4 builds to a nifty ending, it has more things on its mind than just catching the killer. This offbeat police procedural offers an unforgettable portrait of bureaucratic Japan. And it reaches for something more metaphysical in its sense that the meaning of things remains elusive, even when the crime is solved. Elusiveness takes a terrifyingly creepy form in Fever Dream, a dazzling short novel by the Argentine writer Samantha Schweblin. Its heroine, Amanda, is a Buenos Aires native who's traveling in the countryside with her young daughter when something happens, something really bad. We learn what, drip by dread-inducing drip. Along the way, Schwebelin throws us into a fallen world of parental fears, toxic landscapes, spiritual collapse, and some very mysterious worms. Shortlisted for the Man Booker International Prize, Fever Dream will have you looking over your shoulder. That makes it the perfect bridge to my favorite work of any kind this year, David Lynch's Twin Peaks: The Return, the most radically disorienting show ever put on television. Since you will have heard a lot about it already, what I want to recommend is the soundtrack brought out by Rhino. Nobody is better at creating mood than Lynch, who can find the sinister corners of the most innocent pop songs. He loves using music to take us into wildly contradictory emotional places. This album does just that, moving from Twin Peaks' legendary opening theme to Booker T and the MG's bluesy, organ-led Green Onions, which the show played deadpan as you watched a man simply sweep a barroom floor for nearly 3 minutes. In an interview, Lynch once told me, "You know, John, getting lost is beautiful. I love getting lost in this album, which includes great new material like the dreamy No Stars by Rebecca Del Rio. It's a song that, befitting a ghost list, will haunt you."
My dream.
John Powers is film and TV critic for Vogue and Vogue.com. Look for his ghost list on our website, freshair.npr.org. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, my guest will be Spike Lee, who has expanded and updated his 1986 film She's Gotta Have It into a new 10-part Netflix series of the same name about the character Nola Darling.
You know, I don't believe in labels, but as a sex-positive polyamorous pansexual, words like monogamy and family have never even seemed like a remote possibility.
I hope you'll join us.